right, good evening and hello everybody. As mentioned, and once again, my name is Devin and I am still an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is still January 16th, 2017. And my home group is still the Woodbridge Big Book Group that meets Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings. Happy to be here. I was thinking about that for like the final time up here. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to say that because I think maybe I'm not up here ever again, but I could be back. Because I enjoy it. I like the format. I like what you guys are doing. So happy to be a part of it. Not going to recap too much about what we've done in previous weeks, because what we're going to start with reading tonight essentially does that. The premise and the idea I'm going to try to go forward with this evening is picking up on steps 10, 11, and 12. So we're going to start on the middle of page 84, if we could. We finished last time by reading those promises that materialize if we work for them always. And we're going to pick it up, like I said, middle 84, and we'll see, time permitting, how far we get into working with others. Probably going to jump around a little bit there, but that's the idea. So without further ado, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Right, I'm stopping already. The premise to me about 10, 11, and 12 and how I try to think about it is almost the maintenance steps, but that seems too commonly popular, so sometimes I like to stray ever so slightly. So certainly the maintenance steps, but for me almost the putting what I know into practice and executing it in daily life. Right, obviously that happens with a lot of the other steps as well, but oversimplified to me, 10 is that throughout the day and at the end of the night, whether it is the formal worksheets that I've been given by sponsors, friends, whomever, or just a conscious thought and, all right, now that the phone's off, before I go to bed, running through the worksheet in my head, or catching myself doing something, if I'm really lucky, throughout the day as a result of having listened to some people and done some things to have some heightened awareness of self, and how I could be hurting others or limiting my usefulness to others, can come to the surface in a lot of different ways. That's step 10, right? 12 to me is trying to continue to improve and form a relationship with a higher power and continue to develop and strive and seek, right? That word comes up a lot. And 12 is, we'll get to it, but quite literally the most important thing, right? The whole premise and what after we taking care of ourselves to a certain extent, how we give back, which is really, in my mind, not optional, you know? We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, right? That's that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Growing in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Not even could, but it should continue for our lifetime. Right? That disappointing thing that I realized, and not by myself, which is a common theme of my shares, but what I came to realize because it was pointed out to me by someone else, is that there's no end goal here necessarily. There's no finish line like those folks that ran the marathon this weekend. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Right, so I sort of alluded to that, right? To me, some of what is in this book, shy of my initial reaction of recoiling and be like, oh, that's unattainable, like, might as well not try, seems way too challenging. With time, I've learned to, when those thoughts crop up, see, okay, here's something to strive for. And to me, step 10 is one of the biggest ones of those, because I would be a bold-faced liar if I said I was tremendous about and 100% confident that I'm always catching myself being selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful, because that's not the case, right? It's something to strive toward with doing the action, doing things like this, and far beyond that, the awareness of those things crops up and develops, And hopefully I can do a little bit less of these, and especially let a little less of it get beyond me, because that's when it's really great. If it's a thought that I can catch before I make some sort of action that requires an apology, a whole lot of other stuff. But it's stuff to strive forward with, right? Strive toward. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. Right? Again, cannot necessarily 100% identify that. I certainly can't promise that that is always the case, that I'm reacting sanely and normally. And sure, a lot of the times it does happen automatically. Any growth that's within me is sort of in these sort of things we're talking about. Letting things not go beyond me and acting out in some sort of similar manners as I did when I was an active alcoholic. But to me, very important to sort of think about that, right? Something to strive forward with and toward. And really, thinking about that statement, a lot of that has to do with how I think about my spiritual experience and the result of the spiritual experience I believe I've had. One of the big things that came was being aware of some of those defects that I learned about in step 5 when someone explained some patterns in my behavior. But beyond that, the attitude adjustment that did kind of happen, not by itself, because a lot of work was done, but ceasing fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, is like what I see in myself as a result of having had that spiritual experience. I think that was one of the main things that sort of came to be. Once again, more noticeable and more quickly noticeable to others than myself. But retrospectively and from hearing it from others, that was definitely a change that happened. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Right? That's a tremendous segue in what we're going to get to in step 11. But right, this is what we just read is, in my mind, a little bit of an expansion on those 9-step promises. Right? Once again, there's a lot of provided that, so long as. There's things that have to be done, but we're talking about some of the beauty that seemingly just comes to us. Right, obviously we know that's not entirely the case. There was action that went into it, but a lot of it is inexplicable, right? And the explanation is that higher power, in my mind. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, right? Definitely felt that. You get something back, and I'm like, sweet, I'm done. This is better than it was before. Not really convinced it's going to get that much better, because that was tough to see. Yes. Identification, very easy. Resting on laurels. Been there, I will be there again. Which is why it's ever more so important to be part of a community, be accountable, have those sort of stop gaps already in place, right? We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe, and oh, is it. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That is a very often written elsewhere line of the book. And I think that's because people understand just how true it is in their experience. And I can certainly agree with that. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Again, this has been a common theme through my shares. But I love when there is wording that is tough to argue with. The non-negotiables, right? Those are the sorts of things that I have underlined in this book, and they are incredibly frequent, right? We must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And to me, and when I was reading this for the first time and times thereafter with my sponsor felt almost like, based on how my fifth, eighth, and ninth steps went, that I should just be crossing that line out. I was not quite, and still don't think, that I am too equipped to think that I can be using my willpower all that much, if at all. So for me, it is literally crossed out in the book, the use of willpower, because for me, the program that I've created for myself, incredibly unhealthy. Those were my character defects, all just absolute self-will run riot over and over and over again. And that's why we are identifying rather than comparing, because it is certainly a tailorable program. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. And I mean, we already read a little bit about that in the spiritual experience when we were getting through steps 2 and 3. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Right? And again, just referring back to the paragraph above. Sure, we may have some sort of God consciousness. Perhaps there's already been a spiritual experience, whether the white light or the educational variety, like the book describes. But why are we going further? The answer is because that is what we have our daily reprieve contingent upon. Right? That's what it says in the paragraph directly above. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. And I think that was one of those lines that popped out immediately to me, because like I touched about in previous weeks, I come from my introduction to AA, right? The context around it was, sure, I have people that are related to me, but the folks that I consider family and go to holidays at, was raised by, those sort of things, are generations deep family, friends who are all centered around AA. That's how the people I consider family know each other. So when we were talking about better men than I are using it constantly as far as prayer and meditation are concerned, the evidence was everywhere. And this was one of the biggest things that I was like, how the heck are these folks doing this? Right? This group of family members, right? Most of them are so nature-centric, and it's still tough for me to even understand at all. My mom's the type that looks out the window over the kitchen sink while she's doing the dishes and talks to her dad, my great uncle, whomever, and they're the birds, right? That's how they've been reincarnated. It's that level of spirituality, and the time it has taken and still takes for me to, in a strange way, with help from a higher power of my own, not just gawk at that and be like, ah, crazy old lady, like, we gotta do something about this. But as the years go by, and it's not jealousy, because that's also unattractive, but the more I've learned to respect and want something like that for myself, something that deep a connection with some sort of higher power, that's a very common one, right? So better men than we are using it constantly, which is something I had to be convinced of, because I was not quite sure that the folks that I know, and there's a lot of them, that are very, very active in prayer and meditation, it didn't always make sense to me, nor does it still necessarily. So it's good to see a line specifically like that in the book saying, hey, maybe lay off of the judgment for a half second. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it, right? So trying to get to that proper attitude of, hey, let's give it a shot. Because like we talked about in steps 2 and 3, the only requirements to being able to, in my mind, move forward on steps 2 and 3 are to not be in an active state of belligerent denial. I don't have to be able to paint an accurate portrait of my higher power. It says that all I have to do is be willing to be open to the existence of it, or at least admit that I am not the all-powerful being, period. A lot easier to swallow for me. That's what the proper attitude looks like to me. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should have been discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Right, that paragraph, a pretty straightforward, digestible way, in my mind, to work step 10. Right, some sponsors have demanded I do that every day. Some sponsors have referred me to it. We've read it, and then they've handed me a worksheet. Some say, hey, I'm not great at it, but here's the premise. Let's try and keep each other accountable. I wish I could say that I read this paragraph every night before bed, or like I said earlier, throughout the day. That's not always the case. But like I said, with these 10, 11, and 12 steps, it is the striving toward. And like it sort of alludes to here, I can try and be in a state of balance somehow, knowing that I'm not going to probably do this perfect forever, but then just like it says here, to be careful to not drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, admit that, okay, let me not use that as an excuse to just not do it at all ever, right? So it's the ever-evolving balance of how do these steps actually work into my life, and ultimately, if I'm really looking myself in the mirror and doing a gut check, how sober do I want to be? Because these 10, 11, and 12 steps are the easy ones, like it says, to rest on our laurels and be like, I feel like it was an all right day. Like, maybe I don't even have to look too hard into it, right? So the balancing act really comes into it for 10, 11, and 12 for me, which is, like I said, some of those other pieces of the program, having a sponsor, being active in a home group, and ultimately having some other folks to keep you accountable, in my experience, has been important. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. This line's not crossed out, but it should be, because, again, our thought life, that, once again, that's for me. That's me that needs to cross out the God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So, right, my experience with that, the morning stuff. A few different things have happened in not quite 7 years yet, right? There were periods of time where it was a little bit easier to do the classic rollover out of bed and say a prayer for 5-10 at some points when I was in treatment, a half hour every morning, because of course it was, right? The context was there. The time was there. It happened all the time. Sometimes that still comes up, but in my experience, I read different things that I have saved in the favorites album on my phone on the way to work in the morning. That's just the way it's developed for me. Right, so I hurry, scurry, get ready, get out of the house, and then on the way to work, read daily reflections, ever so often look at the screenshot of these pages, whatever it is. And sometimes I don't do it at all, and sometimes I do it the whole 30, 45 minutes in. It changes, and like I'm sort of getting at, I wish it didn't, and there was more consistency, because if I'm deciding in my own little pea brain on the way to work in the morning what I think I need, I've been mentioned there probably a few too many times. So that's just me reflecting on the fly. But that's what my sort of practices look like in current day, just to be transparent. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and we take it easy. We don't struggle because we have ceased fighting anything or anybody. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while, right? The practice makes perfect of 10, 11, and 12. And like I said again, perfect, kind of a dangerous word for me. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it, right? And I don't think there's too many truer paragraphs than that. I'm really just repeating myself at this point, but that's it, right? The practice of this leads us to, and the inserting different things. There's been periods of time when I've had alarms on my phone throughout the day to say, literally stop and think at like 10 a.m. in the morning. Every other day, every day, it's those sort of, until it becomes, and I'm not necessarily convinced, and it's going to take someone else telling me when I'm there, because if I'm deciding that I'm there and I'm on that plane where everything is coming intuitively to me, and I can remove all of these alarms in the phone, worksheets, reminders, again, that's not going to be coming from me, or else something's going wrong. But that's the idea, is to get to a place, and until me, I'm at that place, I'm putting things in my life that are making me, or at least forcing me to hit no on something and make the conscious decision to not do something, putting those already in my life, those daily, whether it's the reading on the train, the stopping throughout the day, the reflecting at night, physical stopgaps, telling someone, hey, like, call me Thursday night. I know it's Monday now, but I need someone to check in, and I know I won't call you, so please call me. Something like that. In times where we are feeling like some sort of awareness that, hey, like, yes, this could be better. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever need we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. Again, a sentence that there's not a lot of negotiability to. It doesn't work. You can easily see why, but I'm sure some people have tried it out. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And we're going to get to another sort of sentence like that, that's saying, hey, like, I love that, because that was one of the criticisms, the preconceived, just unfounded notions that I had when I came into these rooms, that it was on the cultish side, right? Stop me if you heard that before. But a whole, like, huh, interesting, like, is this completely, like, self-contained? I now, like, hate everyone that drinks? This is going to be tough, because I got a lot of friends that drink, and I don't know if they have a problem. We're going to get to that part in working with others here. But this is one of those areas where it is precisely contrary to those preconceived notions I had, right? I love hearing that. Be quick to see where religious people are right. And elsewhere, right, it says be quick to see where others are right. And there's a lot of that. It's like weird, can get stuck in my head. Yeah, okay, I'm an AA. I can't be around it. None of that. Like, can't associate with people that drink. Same thing. I'm not religious. I'm a unique AA spiritual with a higher power. And there's room to move those lines, right? Ultimately, and in a lot of places, it's talking about doing what works for us, right? As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Right? So that, what, 5 pages we just read, encompassing all of 10 and 11, like it says, is a pretty simple and basic way that everything's laid out, right? That doesn't mean, in my mind, that it's easy for the various things I've already mentioned. It's the constant practice to try and be more useful to others, period, right? And that's pretty much what we're going to go with, because those are not my words. They're coming from various places in the book, and the start of step 12, working with others, chapter 7, is one of those. So we'll pick it up with that, page 89. Chapter 7, working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing, not anything, will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives, period. And that's a big statement, right? There's a lot of those big statements. Transparently, I can share because, right, if you haven't been able to tell, in these 10, 11, 12 steps, and really all of them, my program as a whole, that's the sort of recovering alcoholic I am. I can get stuck in the, all right, like, oh boy, 10, 11, 12, huh? Like, that's what I'm sharing about? And just, boom, back, mind to the gutter, unqualified, I don't do it perfect, shouldn't be up there, none of that, right? I can tell you that a little bit of this fellowship 12-step stuff, we got a little bit of evidence on that. And, you know, that sort of thinking for me sometimes is good, to err on the side of, oh, I'm not doing that great, because in a past life, I was polar opposite, right? I can tell you, I'm not normally dead in the middle. Most of the time, I'm on that, we should be doing better side. And sure, not ideal, I'd like to be closer to the middle. But for me, being on that end of the spectrum is so much better than where I was in active alcoholism, which was off the scales to the other side of, man, I am the cat's meow, or whatever phrase you want to use. So it's interesting, right? That dichotomy of how things change. My anecdote about the frequent contact with the newcomers and with others, and sort of what intensive work with alcoholics and the fellowship has done for me is like pretty astounding. I mentioned it in the first week I was here about, for me, I was, I guess, afforded the luxury to follow that suggestion that I heard from a lot of folks to change, like, literally everything, to try and make any beginning of recovery. For me, the most successful thing was changing quite literally everything, starting with the people, places, and things, right? Those are, like AAs are my people today, right? I got married 2 months ago, and the entirety of the bridal party, minus one friend from growing up and the brothers-in-law, were AA people that I've met, right? I haven't been sober forever. It's been less than 7 years. But it's very, very evident the lifelong connections that I've already made in these rooms, and that's why they were up there, right? So it's that sort of stuff. And then even last night, right, we were at a little Friendsgiving at a buddy's house in Paramus, who is an AA friend from the city I originally met in, but there was seven of us and our significant others, you know? And it's cool stuff because there's not like a sponsor-sponsee ring amongst us. It's just acquaintances. But we do things together that are centered in the program, but go beyond that, right? We've taken like some trips together, that sort of stuff, and I consider them my best friends, which is like kind of crazy because there's not a lot of folks still around, certainly because they probably weren't that interested in me and what I was doing at the time, but also I've just changed as a person since those high school, college days, you know? And the reflection's always interesting, right? It is what it is. But I think that sentence, right, the frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives, is something that I can certainly identify with at the very least, right, even if I'm not convinced that I'm doing 10, 11, 12 perfect. That evidence is very clearly there, which I'm tremendously grateful for. So with that, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You'll be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish, right? Just like we can learn a lot from religious figures and see where they are right. Same thing, as there's a lot of value in ministers and doctors, but it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. Uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. To be helpful is our only aim. That's the premise. The purpose of the book is to form a connection with a higher power. The purpose of now, our lives, is to help others. That's about as simple as I can boil it down when I get to those days. You know, it's, all right, here's why I'm reading the book, because I need this to be able to, ultimate goal, be useful to other people, period, end of story. Sometimes simplifying it that much is where I need to get to, you know? So we're not getting through the entirety of working with others, but I do sort of want to jump around to my relatively limited experience on being a proper sponsor, but some of my understanding of the guidelines of how this goes, right? Written a long time ago, so I love reading about the taking people into our homes. Sometimes you have to sedate them if necessary, those sort of warnings, right? Again, sort of a unique context of growing up, which was not in the 50s, it was in the 2000s and 2010s. I was in a household with myself and my mom where there were not quite anywhere near that level, but I grew up in a house where there were probably, in, I don't know, the 18 years I lived there, like 20 plus like alcoholics that actively lived with us who were sponsees of my mother's. And holy moly, like that's kind of cool, kind of jaw-dropping at first when you come into your teen years. You'd be like, yeah, this is a little weird, like cool roommates, like living babysitters, whatever. But right, just context for what I'm going to talk about. That's still the case now, right? There's just another room since I moved out. But it is. That's sort of what's what I grew up around, right? Was just in very intensive, active 12-step work, and ultimately a tremendous example, if you ask me. So right, tough to, in 20 minutes, summarize all of the different guidelines that have to do with sponsorship, right? And I'll be the first one to out myself. I've had 5 sponsors, personally, mostly because of moving around and this and that. Sponsee-wise, 1 for about 6 months. So I'll be the first one to say that, neither here nor there, just is my story. Like I said, I lean on that side of, and especially in this realm, could probably be doing better on that front, and so be it. That doesn't mean that there's not a reason for me to attempt to be useful up here tonight, right? So I'm just going to skim through the pages and stop, truthfully, without too much silence about some of like the obvious guidelines and things that I've found that have worked in my limited experience, and what's worked with me from a sponsor side of things, right? The talk about the predispositions, right? In the first meetings, what my sponsors have told me and what has worked in practice, depending on the type of alcoholic that's being approached, is, right? And it's funny because I feel like I'm preaching to the choir a lot of times. I heard it from you guys, so what value is hearing it back regurgitated to you going to provide? But I'm doing it nonetheless. The whole premise of in those initial meetings, letting the newcomer talk, right? And just walking up to say, like in the early meetings and even early years, all it took was a hey, how are you? Like happy you're here, keep coming back situation. Going to the diner every once in a while, it would be like so. What are you coming around the rooms for? Like, what's going on? How are you? What's your life looking like? That sort of stuff. And like it says, right, by and large, there was not a lot of prodding necessary. Actively listening and then doing what we preach of identifying rather than comparing and sharing our own experience is really all we can do. To me, that's not the that complicated part. The part where it gets really difficult, in my experience, is the fact, and I do believe it is a fact, and it's outlined as such in the book, that you can't make someone recover. And I think that's a really challenging thing. Because, right, whether that was me going through my own stuff and having dozens and dozens of people that kind of were too close to be able to do anything and sort of forced into a position of watching it and not being able to make me hit my bottom, I've seen that in others, right? That's why the sponsee that I've had, unless I was really messing up that bad, who knows, that is a possibility. To me, it was just someone that wasn't ready, period, is what it was. It was me reaching out, setting up the weekly meetings, being super over-prepared with like a curriculum almost, and maybe that scared him off, who knows. But ultimately, it's just you can't make someone recover. You can connect with and share your experience and then provide the hope and be that example of what the program has the ability to be able to do, right? It says that in How It Works, of if you want what we have, and very importantly, are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps, right? There is that qualifier, which is why any sponsor that I've ever asked to sponsor me says, are you willing to go to any lengths? And, right, I talked about this when we read that originally. Tough gut check every once in a while. Who knows how many times I said yes but didn't mean it. But it is, right? I'm going to skip ahead to 93, the top of 93, the italicized area that sort of lends itself back to when we're almost walking through what we've already read in previous weeks, because now we're taking someone else through the book in a much thorough example of kind of like what's been happening these last few weeks. We're talking about the second and third steps now of let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you, right, like I was alluding to before. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Right, so that's sort of another act of, especially a brand new alcoholic who's just sort of thinking about or has found himself in the recovery space. I think that's another very important opportunity for a sponsor to provide that could ultimately, like, candidly be life-saving, and it's helping someone work through some of these, not even misconceptions, but like the preconceived notions of either AA itself, the spiritual / religious component of it, what they think AA means, which to me when I came in was like boring adult life, I guess. I was like, yeah, sure, more mature, better stuff probably works out, but like wasn't ready to give up the fun stuff. Right, working through some of those preconceived notions. Right, I have underlined at the bottom of 93, to be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish, constructive action. Right, so that's one of the hurdles that in this chapter it talks about helping someone work through if they have it. Going to 94, right, my next large underlined area is outline the program of action. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him, and you hear that all over the place from actual folks in the rooms. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Right, under no obligation to you. You hear that a lot, and I've heard that from every sponsor I've ever had, is this is not like a locked and loaded thing. Just like the program, anything else, it's dynamic. Feel free, and I will feel no lesser the person because of it, but to fire me if I think you're not doing what you need to be doing for this to be a successful relationship, then I'll let you know, and if it comes to it, maybe we have to part our separate ways. It is what it is, because that's the goal, is to be most useful to others, not to make a new friend, not to have some sort of other interest, right? It's that simple. So it is. I actually have one of those conversations tomorrow, as a matter of fact, just talking about the whole sponsor-sponsorship relationship. So that is a thing. Suggests how important it is that he placed the welfare of other people ahead of his own, right? Again, that is the premise. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. Nice. I love that phrasing. And right, that to me gets back to the whole gift of desperation, right? The desperation of a drowning man. Because the explanation of that line to me is someone that is absolutely beaten and defeated has even that better a chance of recovering. When there's not a lot of not yets, and you're really that beat down, and your bottom is clear as day, in a sort of roundabout way, sure, tough and unfortunate that it had to get to that point, but makes it all the more easier to say that whatever's working or going on right now is not working, something's got to change. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Your candidate may give you reasons why he need not follow all the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. Write that 4, 5, and 8, 9. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him your copy of this book. This whole first paragraph is highlighted entirely, so that must be good. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes, like I was talking about before. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he is likely to say you rushed him. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they work for you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And I have written in the margin, can't change people. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. If he is sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. Sounds like a big task. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way, or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. Right, that's been a little bit of a theme in what we've read tonight. Be quick to see where religious folks are right, how the ministers and doctors may have something to offer. Even though we're uniquely suited to help, other people can certainly help. And just in the same vein, and this is really what sort of smashed my preconceived notion when I came in of the whole cult premise, is that right here, if he thinks that he can find recovery or improve his life in some other way, go ahead. There it is. Encourage him to do so, in fact. And I really do think that's true, and I think that's incredibly important. Because for this alcoholic, whenever it's like some non-negotiable, this is the only way, oh boy, like good luck. Good luck with that. So far, this happens to certainly be the way, and I will share that with the folks that I run into the path of. But after gut-checking some folks and saying, do you really think you've completely exhausted this effort? Like, have you actually given it all you got and seen this through? There's nothing handcuffing them to the seat, you know? And I do. I think that's just so ridiculously important. And it goes on to say that, we're not going to get there, probably, but it goes on to say that it'd be even about being around alcohol, period. And you know what? We are going to get there in just a second. Picking back up from bottom of 95. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that works with us. And that, like, is the messaging that I at least try to give off. Listen, whatever. Like, this worked for me. If you'd like to hear about it, I'd be more than happy to tell you. Please tell me about yourself. And by no means do you have to follow what I'm about to say, but you are more than willing to, and I can tell you how much it's changed my life, right? But point out that we alcoholics have much in common, and that you would like, in any case, to be friendly. Let it go at that. And then I have in the margin down here of that, if he is to find God, noted the goal of the book, like we read earlier on in chapter 3. And then I have the four absolutes written on the margins of honesty, purity, love, and selfishness. Selflessness, big difference there. And then the three parts of the 12th step. One, the first 11 steps. Two, the personality change. And that three, that awareness of God, and that God is kind, loving, possesses pure love and mercy. I am going to skip ahead to page 100 now to conclude the last week. We're at the bottom of 100. I'm going to pick up, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. Right? We skipped over the connection of this sort of anecdote and way of thinking, how it relates to helping another alcoholic, but we're getting there anyway because it goes right along with what we talked about as far as be quick to see where other people are right. This is not necessarily the only way for people to improve their lives, but holy moly, it worked for me. Along the same sort of line. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be some places like the Greenland Ice Cap, and even there an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent their husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. Kind of what I was alluding to, saying, same premise. If people were telling me that AA is the only thing, and if you're in, you must be in forever, absolutely, might have not gone that well. Same thing for me and in my recovery, and like it's saying in the book, because they happen to agree with me on this one, and this is kind of like almost a way that I've seen super unqualified to talk about this, but like some parenting styles almost backfire. It's like a super overshielded child. I have a cousin who's going through this right now, as a matter of fact. And they're not in these rooms, so I'm going to say it. I have a cousin who just went off to college. Is like, what, 6 months in at this point? And holy moly, her parents were militant. She had to be the best at everything. Shielded entirely, no social interaction. So she's immature, has never experimented with alcohol, any of it. No boyfriends, no nothing, no social life. The idea was to get her to be a D1 athlete, right? Came crashing down during COVID, had long COVID, other stuff came to the play, and now they're worried sick about her because she's gotten into trouble a few times already, right? Certainly this is not criticism, but the idea is that premise of absolutely shielding, and right, I think that's what kind of what happened with me to a certain extent. I was told no, no, no so many times when I was finally off the leash and was able to say yes for myself and have no one there swatting my hand while I reached for it, might have contributed. Incredibly importantly, that is not why I'm an alcoholic, nor did it even contribute to it at all, I'm sure. But it's saying right here, we believe that any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, right? The door might stay locked for a while, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. So our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. That includes bars, nightclubs, dances, receptions, weddings, even plain ordinary whoopee parties. To a person who has had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. You will note that we made an important qualification. They're even pointing out the qualification they made. It's so important that they're now going to point you right to it. Therefore, ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure you are on solid spiritual ground before you start, and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. But if you are shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. I'm going to skip the next paragraph, and at bottom of 102, I'll finish out this, and then I am eagerly looking forward to hear from you guys. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. We often need it to carry green recruits through a severe hangover. Maybe not advised anymore, but to each their own. Some of us still serve it to our friends, provided they are not alcoholic. But some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone. We never argue this question. We feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. And this is what I was sort of getting at earlier, about AA might not be the only thing that works for people, but to each their own, obviously it has for us, that's why we're here. But going even further beyond it, as far as drinkers and non-drinkers as a whole, we are careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. Every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. Someday, we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, but we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness or hostility, both as far as toward the drinking community and as a whole, in my opinion. Drinkers will not stand for it. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to! Right, I don't think there's more for me to elaborate necessarily on that. And I've made it to the bottom of the hour. So with that, just a quick recap. Really grateful for the opportunity. It's been a great time. It's helped me more than it may have helped all of you, and that is absolutely true. And thanks. Happy to hear from you guys again.